Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Tzadi Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a mark the Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the mark the Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins three lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Hey at the new Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a title, No Say Chloli, a general topic heading, Mechiras Sodeh HaMeshubedes L'Ksuba, the sale of fields upon which a woman, a wife, has a lien on, a wife has a lien on her husband's properties, her husband's land, in anticipation of the payment of her ksuba. If that land is sold, so technically speaking, the woman, being that her marriage predates the husband's sale of those lands, the woman would have a right to, if necessary, seek collection of her ksuba if her husband, let's say, dies, leaving no what's called b'nei chorin properties in his own possession. She could seek out compensation, payment, or collect the land from those purchasers. We will describe, we'll be dealing with a situation where a woman, by confirming her husband's sale of the lands, by her, let's say, signing on the contract, foregoes collection, forfeits her rights to collect from those lands. In effect, the woman giving her approval to the sale, to the selling away of lands that her husband, technically speaking, would have owed to her ksuba. That's a very general statement. There's a great amount of detail behind that. But what we want to give you right now, before we begin the sugya, is the feeling that a woman has a lien on all of her husband's landed properties. The ksuba shibud that exists. The shibud is the lien that she has on the properties. The Mishnah. Mi shohaya nosui shtei noshim. Umochar es sodehu, a man who was married to two wives, and he sold land that upon which the women had a lien, a shibud on the field. Let us try to use the word shibud as we go on through the sugya, so that once we've clarified that the word shibud means a claim upon or a lien upon those lands, we can feel comfortable using the word shibud henceforth. So he sold the land upon which she had a shibud. The kosva rishona lalokeach, and the woman who married first. Rishona means the first woman. Means the woman that had an earlier marriage date, an earlier ksuba. And she writes a disclaimer to the purchaser. Dinu dvorim ein li imoch. I have no, let's say, claim or dealings with you regarding this field. So, on the surface, it would appear then that the person who bought the field from the husband would have this feeling of comfort that he won't be approached at any point in time by this woman, by the wife, in seeking claims, ksuba claims, from the property that he is buying. Hashnia, the second wife, now she didn't write any disclaimer. So in the event that that the husband dies leaving no properties, then the second wife, the one with the later ksuba, motzia mealokeach, she has a right to claim upon the death of her husband the payment of the ksuba. Again, if the husband left no personally held properties, I want you to transfer to me the land that you bought. After all, I had a lien on that. For Rishona, the first wife with the earlier ksuba, Minashnia, she can claim, what are you taking the land as payment for your ksuba? My ksuba date predates yours. And again, we're dealing with a situation where there were very limited properties, where that one property would cover only one of the ksubas. So the first woman would have a claim against the second woman, give me the land. V'halokeach min harishona. We didn't mention this before, but let's just assume that the one who purchased the land purchased it with a guarantee that if he should ever lose the land, he has recourse, and the lokeach, the purchaser, can take it away from the first lady. After all, the first lady said she wasn't going to stand in the way of the purchaser. So the purchaser takes it away from her. V'chayzros chalila, and then this cycle continues, because once the lokeach gets the land from the Rishona, as we saw before, the second woman takes it away from the lokeach, from the purchaser. And this goes round and round. That's the word chalila means, goes round and round. Ad shiyasu pshara b'neim, until they strike some type of compromise solution. V'chein bal chov, v'chein isha balas chov. We're going to leave these two expressions for later in the Gemara. Mirtz Hashem, when we get to the end of the Perek, essentially, which is at the bottom of Omid Beis, we'll then see how Rashi explains these phrases. The Gemara asks, regarding the removal or the disclaimer expression, dinu dvarim, that the first woman issued to the purchaser, does that really effectively remove her? V'chikosfa le mayhavi. And this is a discussion that we've had earlier in the Masechta concerning the effectiveness of this expression. What legal strength or bindingness, if you can say, does this expression have? V'hotanya, have we not learned ho'imer l'chavero, dinu dvorim ein li al sodazu? Imagine you have two partners that own a piece of land, and one partner removes himself from the partnership by using this expression, dinu dvorim ein li al sodazu, v'ein li esek ba, v'yodai misulekes, v'yodi misulekes heimena. All these expressions mean essentially the same thing. I have no dealings with it, my hand is removed from it. Lo omar klum, the result of any of these expressions is nothing, meaning it's meaningless. He's still there. He's still in the picture. So too with the woman. So what she said to the purchaser, yadinu dvarim ein li imach. She's still in the picture. She could still block the lokeach or claim from the lokeach. The Gemara answers, hocha b'mayaskinan, the Mishnah that indicated that it is an effective expression, b'shikonu miyada, the purchaser, the lokeach, made a kinyan gesture. A kinyan is a gesture, an action which confirms a particular deal. So it's an action. So that he, and it's very often the well-known case of kinyan is the handkerchief exchange that was done. The Gemara asks, v'chikonu miyada mai have, and even if a kinyan was done, does that really have an effect in the case of a wife married to a man, to a husband that's selling a field? Tamar, could she not say, Nachas Ruach Osisi Labali? By my action of removing myself from the field, you know what? It was all a show. It was all an attempt to give my husband a good feeling. Nachas ruach means a good feeling, a feeling of comfort. I wanted to give that good feeling to my husband. Here he's making a deal. I wanted him to feel that I'm not interfering with the deal, even though I'm someone that has a lien on that property, that he, in a certain manner of speaking, maybe he shouldn't be selling it. But nevertheless, I was interested in simply giving him a good feeling. And that means just that. There's no legal effectiveness to that. It's simply a matter of psychology. Mi lo knan, have we not in fact learned? There's a Mishnah in Maseches Gittin. That's what appears now in the frame. Lokach min ha'ish v'chozar v'lokach min ha'isha. A person is buying a property, piece of property from a man, a married man, and he makes a deal with the man, and then he makes a deal with the wife. Mekho botel. The sale is off. And the mashmos of that, for right now, the implication is it's completely off. But didn't the woman second the motion? Alma, you see from here, yecholo hisha tomar nachas ruach osisi labali. That all I was trying to do was to give him a good feeling by seconding the motion. Let's take a look at Rashi. A few lines up from here in the Rashi, Mekho Botel, Mashma Legamri, the expression that the deal is off, sounds like it's completely off. Yafilu Bechaya Baal, even while the husband himself is still alive. Bavavavatsra, Mukmina La, Bachsmeis and Shalosh Sodos, Maseches Bavavavatsra, this Mishnah is explained as referring to one of three different kinds of fields. When we say kinds, I mean legally speaking. O yichador lo l'ksubasa, a field that he earmarked as the payment for a ksuba. O kosav la besocha ksuba, or a field that he had written into the ksuba document upon their marriage. O shechnisa lo shum mishela, or a field that she brought from her father's house, property that her father gave her, and whose value was written into the ksuba, into their original marriage document. So, the details aside, what do we see here? We see that this concept of this behavior of a woman seconding a motion of sale of her husband is really not as of no legal meaning. The sale is off, and what she was doing was simply trying to give her husband a good feeling. So the question remains, how do we explain our Mishnah where the first woman seemed to have effectively removed herself from challenging the sale? If you say she said to the Lokeach, Dinu Dvora Bein Limoch, and she made a kinyan to that effect, that doesn't have any legal power. Omar Rabbi Zeira, Omar Rav Chisda, Loi Kasha. The seeming, we'll say, discrepancy between our Mishnah and the Mishnah that we just cited from Gittin isn't a problem. Ha Rebbe Meir, Ha Rebbe Yehuda. We see a reflection of two different Tanaic schools of thought, two different Tanaic opinions. Our Mishnah represents Rebbe Meir, and where it said Mekho Botel, that represents Rebbe Yehuda. Desanya, now we give you a source in which these two opinions appear. Kosav l'rishon v'lo chosmalo. Kosav means a document, a deed was written regarding the sale of a field, and called the shtar mecher was written, and v'lo chosmalo, that means you have a first purchaser, that the husband is selling the field to a man, to a Rishon, first guy, and she doesn't second it. She doesn't, lo chosmo, she doesn't sign on to that. In other words, she doesn't concede to that sale. Then, l'sheni v'chosmo lo, regarding a separate field, a second field, l'sheni means to a second man, a second purchaser, regarding this second deal regarding a second field to us, to another man, she signs on to that. Chosmalo means she signs on, she agrees with the sale. Ibda ksubasa divrei Rebbe Meir. We take a look at Rashi. Ibda ksubasa imein shom b'nei chorin. If the husband dies without leaving any personally held properties, in other words, whatever he had sold away, this woman will have no recourse. Sharei HaRishon Omer, the first fellow, will say to the second fellow, you know, when I bought the field, Hinachti Loch Mokim, I should say, the first seller will say to the woman, who comes to collect the field that she did not second, that she didn't sign on to, he will tell her, Hinachti lech mokom ligvos semenu. When I purchased, I had left property for you to collect from, namely that second field. So you don't have any right to take the field away from me, because when I bought the field, it's true you didn't sign on, but there was still a source of collection, namely that second field. So she can't get anything from the first guy, and she won't be able to get anything from the second guy because she signed on to his sale. That's Rebbe Meir's opinion. And you can see that Rebbe Meir is taking very seriously the woman's removal, her disclaimer. Rebbe Yehuda Oimer, Yecholi Yishetoymer Nachas Ruchas Yisilabali. Atem Malachem Olai. This woman can say, yeah, I seconded the motion, the sale of that second field. I was just trying to make my husband feel good. But it's not that I really was foregoing my claims to that field. So Rashi says she can say that and end up collecting from the second field. So now what do we have? Just to take a bird's eye view. We've got our Mishnah that reflects Rebbe Meir's opinion. And we've got the Mishnah in Gittin that reflects Rebbe Yehuda's opinion. Namely, Nachas Ruchas Yisilabayli. The Gemara asks, V'Rebbe. Rebbe is a reference to Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, was a later Tana, the editor or the redactor of the Mishnayos. Why is it Sosam Lo Ocha K'Rebbe Meir, V'Sosam Lo Hosam K'Rebbe Yehuda? How is it that he indicated, the term Sosam means the recording of a Mishnah without a name attached to it, and generally speaking, a nameless Mishnah represents something of a significant authority. And who took the names out in order to bestow unto the Mishnah a level of authority by having no name? So it seems like it's a Mishnah that everyone would agree with. It's not that we're trying to take the credit away from somebody, but simply by having no name, it becomes something that's of, we'll say, public acceptance. It's not an individual opinion. That being the case, Rebbe is the one that set things up like that. So what's going on here? He has he sets up two Mishnayos with, in effect, two opposite points of view. Our Mishnah here, like Rebbe Meir, and the Mishnah there in Maseches Gittin, like Rebbe Yehuda. What's going on? That can't be. So we have two approaches. Number one, Omar of Papa, our Mishnah, which says that her removal is binding and that the claim of Nachas Ruach HaSisil Baili is not something she's going to be saying, that I was just trying to make him feel good, is Begrushov, a divrei hakol. Our Mishnah is talking about a woman who was divorced. A woman who was divorced, she's not a woman that is interested in creating a good feeling for her husband. So that when she had been divorced when she seconded those sales. A woman who's divorced, of course, has a ksuba coming to her. So she had been divorced and then wrote this disclaimer, seconding the husband's sale. So there's no more taina of Nachas Ruach HaSisil Labayli because of her status as a grusha. Rav Ashi Omar Kula Rebbe Meir Hi. Both our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Gittin reflect Rebbe Meir's opinion. V'ad kan lo koma Rebbe Meir Hosam. Rebbe Meir says that the deal is standing and that she loses her ksuba. She said that he says Ela b'shnei lekuchos. That's where you have two purchasers, and we're going to have to add very importantly that our Mishnah is also a case like that. We'll get to that a little bit later. So that Rebbe Meir speaks about losing a ksuba, and there's no taina of nachas ruach hasis lebayli. Rav Ashi says that's when you have two lekuchos, two purchasers. as the case, if you notice, just going up about 7-8 lines, you saw the source with Kosov L'Rishon, and in that source, Rabbi Meir's name had been underlined and said, Idduk Subasa. That's a case that there were two purchasers. And that's when Rabbi Meir says, Idduk Subasa, the Amri law, we say to the lady, Im Iso Denachas Ruach Avdis, if your intention was, like Rabbi Yudit said, to make your husband feel good, you should have signed on to the sale of the first purchaser. Avol belokeach echad, like the case of the Mishnah in Gittin, there was only one purchaser, and there the Mishnah said the mekach is batel. Afilu Rabbi Meir Moda, even Rabbi Meir will concede that she can say, not that I signed on to the sale was only to make my husband feel good. We only see one type of action on in that case. Just to repeat, as opposed to the second, the source where Rabbi Meir said Ibduk Subasa, that's where we saw a dual behavior on her part. So that to Rabbi Meir, it's obvious she's not working out of a decision simply to make her husband feel good, because if that were the case, she would have backed up, she would have confirmed the first sale, which in that case she did not. Now, in our Mishnah, we saw that the woman's removal is binding, and it's not just lip service of Nachas Ruach Asis L'Baili. Umasnisen, our Mishnah, where we see that the sale to the first one is a binding sale, the Kosav Lei L'Acher. And here Rashi adds, a few lines down, we have a little star to help you find it more easily in the Rashi. The Kosav HaBaal L'Acher Kedim L'Zeh. The husband had actually sold the field to someone else before the purchaser that appears in the Mishnah. So there's a little prehistory to the Mishnah. And that first sale, she did not sign on to. V'lo chosmalo, v'lo zeh chosma. And this one she did sign on to. And that, we saw, Ravashi said that when you have the woman behaving in a dual fashion, we say she's not working with the attempt to create nachas ruach, but she is serious. And that's why the disclaimer, her removal is binding. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, which reads the Nosei. Afalpi de'ein nifroin ben yishubodim b'mokom sheish b'nei chorin. Even though we do not activate the lien that people have on others' property when the original debtor has his own properties from which to collect. Mahadin im ishtaduf hani b'nei chorin. What happens if the fields that the original debtor has go bad? Ishtaduf, the word shidofon, it means they go bad, so that someone who has a debt to collect, the only decent properties are those that he has since sold. The original, the properties that he still is holding on to, though, have gone bad. What is the din? Tanan hosam. The Mishnah says in Masechet Gittin, "Ein nifroin min chosim shubadim b'mokum sheish nechosim b'nei chorin, v'afilu hein ziburis." If you have someone, let us say, lent money to a borrower, the lender wants to collect his debt. The lender is not allowed to collect from properties that he may have a lien on. Those are properties that the borrower had sold after he had taken the loan. So the lender cannot seek those as a source of collection as long as the borrower has his own properties that he hasn't sold, that he's currently in possession of. Those are called nechosim b'nei chorin. V'afilein ziburis means even if they are of the lowest quality of properties in a tri-level property grading, we have Edis, top quality, Beninus, middle quality, Ziburis, lowest quality. And we say that a lender has a right to collect from the Beinonis properties. However, if the choice that he has is collecting from properties that are currently held by the man that borrowed from him, and they happen to be poorest quality properties, or seeking payment from the shibudim, from the properties currently in the hand of purchasers, he is not to go bother the purchasers because the original borrower still has properties, even if they happen to be ziburis quality properties. That's background. Ibayalaho, and now the question that we introduced in our introduction. Ishtaduf b'nei chori, let us say that the b'nei chorin properties that the debtor is holding on to, currently holds, have gone bad. Mahu the litrof mibashabdi. Does that give a right to the creditor to go collect from the purchasers, to, let's say, exercise his lien? The Gemara tries to answer this with a source, Toshma, our Mishnah, Kosav lo Rishon velo Chosmo lo. I should say more accurately, this is the quote from the source in Maseches Bava Kama. We saw this quote earlier, but from the that case where a man, a husband, had sold property to a first purchaser and she didn't sign on, Lasheni v'chosmalo, he then sold another piece of property to a second purchaser and she signed on to that. Ibda ksubasa divrei Rebbe Meir. This woman has no recourse. She loses out on getting her ksuba. V'isalka daitoch ishtadif b'nei chori torof mimashabdi. If this concept was correct, that when the b'nei chorin go bad, a woman still has recourse to, and that is to collect from mishubadim, or we say not just the woman, but in general, people who borrow money and owe money to a creditor, if the borrower's properties go bad, so the creditor can go to the purchasers. So if this idea is correct, this idea would apply to, you would think it applies to the woman as well. Nihidi ibdok subosa misheni, granted, she loses a right to collect from the second guy. Now here we're making a parallel that's like ishtadof nechsi. She signed off on that particular sale. We saw in the source two lines ago, Lasheni v'chosmalo. So in our minds, it's like it went bad for her. She can't collect from that. It's not there anymore for her. It's like it went bad. It went like ishtaduf. So granted, she loses the ksuba from the second guy. May Rishon miha tikvi, let her collect from the first purchaser. And yet, the source said, Ibdok subasa, Rebbe Meir says she is a total loss. Rashi, just a couple lines down from here, Harishon miha tikvi, say, May Rishon miha tikvi, Sharei niskalkil zuhusa, b'mokoim shiniach lo ligvos. The first guy, when he purchased, if we had this svara before, he says to her, well, don't bother me, I left property for you to collect from, which eventually was bought by the second guy. So go there. However, she signed away on that. So it's like her chances to collect from that went bad. Vave leik ishtaduf. It's like the shidofon. And yet the source says she doesn't get anything. So what do we see from here? That ishtaduf b'nei chori, you cannot go to mishubadim. That would be the approach. That would be what the Gemara is showing you. Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. Rav Nachman doesn't accept that, and he says, "My ibda." The source said, "Ibda ksubasa." Ibda means ibda misheni. She loses from the second guy, but she can collect from the first fellow. And just like she can collect from the first fellow, so too in the case of ishtadif b'nei chori, a person would be allowed to collect his debt from the mishubadim. Omar Rava. Rava objects to Rav Nachman's approach. But here, structurally, we have to take note very carefully. We have, first of all, Rava makes a comment. It's a long comment. And Rashi himself points out that On the third to last narrow line, you'll notice Rashi says, "V'kula Rava komar law." This entire section is something that Rava is saying, even though, and I should point out, by the way, that what we're doing is presenting Rashi's approach to the Gemara. Tosfos has a different approach to it. Tosfos at the bottom, Tosfos of the page, but we're not going to add additional commentary simply to keep things simple. So Rava, as we see, he objects. Now, what exactly he objects to, that we're going to have to clarify later. But he certainly objects to Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok's, we'll say, method of reasoning. What Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok did is that when the source that was quoted twice on this page, most recently 5-6 lines up, the last Toshma, Rav Nachman Yitzchok took the word ibdok subasa to mean she loses from the second, but she still has recourse, and therefore concluding from that source, first of all, she doesn't lose out completely, and second of all, that from that source, we can learn the din of ishtaduf b'nei chorin. So is that source where she had signed away her rights with regard to the second purchaser, is that really like ishtaduf b'nei chorin? Omar Rava, shtei tshuvos badover. So Rava says, I have two objections to the approach taken by Rav Nachman Yitzchok. Chada, one objection is the ibda legamri mashma. When the source says she loses the ksuba, means she loses, it sounds, it means she loses completely. So that on that level, if you're going to say from that source, you're going to conclude that ishtadif ben ichori, you still have a claim from Yishubadim, like Rav Nachman Yitzchok wanted to say, I don't see that at all, because in the source of ibdo ksubasa, it would mean to me she loses completely without any recourse. The Oid Tanya, and furthermore, I'm going to show you that she doesn't collect from the first guy, contrary to Rav Nachman ben Yitzchok. The source says, Lova min ho'echad. A man borrowed money from a malve, from a lender. Umochar nechosav. Umochar is the love, sold his properties, l'shnayim, to two people. V'kosav balchov l'lokeach sheni, and the malve, he writes to the second purchaser, dinu dvorim ein limoch. I relinquish any claims to challenge your purchase. In other words, I'm removed from your purchase. Ein lo al halokeach rishon klum. That malve cannot then go and try to recoup or recover his loan from the first purchaser. Neshiyocho lomar, the first purchaser can say, hinachti luchal mokoim ligvos hemenu. What are you bothering me for? When I purchased, I was a first purchaser, I had an earlier date. When I purchased the parcel of land, I did so leaving you with a source of collection, namely that second parcel of land that was sold subsequently to subsequent to my purchase. So we see from this source that in the case of, let's say, contrary to what Rav Nachman Yitzchok said, that she, a woman who had signed on to the second person's sale, that she loses collecting from him but can collect from the first one, you see, in this parallel situation, she cannot collect from the first one. So far, this is all Rava speaking, showing that Rav Nachman Yitzchok's method of concluding what he concluded is not accurate. And now Rashi, and there's where Rashi departs from Tosfos. According to Rashi, here Rava continues speaking. And furthermore, Hasam Ihu de'afsid nafshe biyodayim. That is a case where a person brought the loss onto himself, so that you can't compare or draw conclusions from a case like that to a case of ishtadif nichsi. That's let's read that again. Hosam ihu de'afsid nafshi biyodayim. There, the lender had brought upon himself the loss by signing away his rights to the second guy, signing away his rights to collect from the second guy, just like the woman who signed away her rights by signing on to the sale to the second purchaser. And all of that is not similar to the case of Ishtadif Nichsi. So that, now, my understanding of this Gemara is that though Rav Nahum Yitzchok, practically speaking, wanted to say that in the case of Ishtadif Nichsi, the person still has recourse, and Rava, in effect, seems to be saying the same thing. What Rava's objection is that you can't prove that Ishtadif Nichsi has recourse from these cases, Kosav Lurishan V'lchosmalo, L'sheni V'lchosmalo, or the case that we just had here with the Malva signing away his rights to collect from the second purchaser. They're simply lacking in parallel. So that it seems to me that even though, as far as practical halacha is concerned, there might be agreement between Rav Nachman Yitzchok and Rava, and again, we're following Rashi's approach, nevertheless, Rava doesn't like the way Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok reached his conclusion. Let's continue in the Gemara. Omar le Rav Yemar le Ravashi. Continuing at the top of Omid Beis, for ha'maisim b'chol yom, dahu gavra de mishkein le pardisa le chavrei le eser shonin v'kosh le chomei shonin. Before we go into the translation of this, I just want to clarify one point. At the end of Omid Aleph, after hearing Rava's objection to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Rava was left us with the feeling that, as far as Ishtaduf is concerned, I don't see an answer. I don't see a clear way of dealing with it. As far as the approach Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok took, that, oh, in the case of Ishtaduf Nichsi, you certainly can go to the B'nai Chorin, the sources that he quoted don't lead me to that conclusion. The sources that he quoted indicate, first of all, the ibda concept means total no recourse. And furthermore, the case that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok was citing, in which I would come to the conclusion of total loss, that's because they brought the loss unto themselves. But in the case of Ishtadif Nichsi, I don't know. I can't say for sure. That's the feeling that Rava leaves you with at the end of the Omid. Then Rav Yemar says to Ravashi, why is the issue unclear? And that's where our Gemara picks up at the top here of Omid Beis, where he says, we find that we enable people who have a shibud, and their source of collection went bad, they can then go to the Lekuchos. And now we have to explain the case. The Mora had said, the Maisa B'Choyo means it's an everyday happening, that people, Dahu Gavra, a person borrowed money, the Mishkein Le Pardeso Lechavrei, and he set up as a source of collection a vineyard to the Malveh, Lieser Shonin, for 10 years, and during the 10 years, the Malva will consume the produce of that field, of that vineyard, and that will constitute his payback. But what happened? The kosh l'chamei shanin, the vineyard kosh means it aged. Say what? It dried out. So there was no more source of collection for the malve, for the lender. The osel kamayu de rabbanon. In this case, these kind of cases come to the rabbis. The kosfu lay tirpa. Now we didn't emphasize enough that the kosh l'chamei shanin, after 5 years it aged, that's like ishtaduf, the field went bad, his source of collection went bad. And what do we find? We find that the rabbis write a tirpa. Tirpa, we've seen this a few times in the past, this is a court document enabling a lender, a person that has a claim, to collect from purchasers. So what Rav Yemar is asking Rav Ashi, why would Rava have any doubts about the issue of ishtadif nilsi, how to conduct oneself? Here you have a very common case, and you see that in the case of ishtadif, we do give the creditor a means of compensation. We provide him with recourse to go seize upon the properties that were purchased, the shibudim. So Rav Ashi says, no, what you're citing as a daily type occurrence, a case that's frequently dealt with, Hasam Nami, that case too is not parallel to our question of Ishtadif. Inu, who, the Afsidu Anafshayu, the people that purchased the vineyard from a guy that owed money, they brought the loss onto themselves. Those purchasers the purchasers who purchased property from a man that had loaned money and set up a kerem, a vineyard, as the means of payment. These purchasers who bought other lands acted with negligence. They brought the loss on themselves. Kevan de havu yadi the pardesa of the kish. They knew that vineyards have a tendency to dry out. In the meantime, they bought land from a fellow that had borrowed money and set up as a source of collection to the lender a pardes. Well, but they knew that they were putting themselves in a precarious position by buying other lands from this guy, knowing that the pardes, which was the source of collection for that lender, it could go bad. Lo ibayalu lemizvan. These purchasers should not have bought from that borrower. The Hilchasa, the Gemara, after you see it hadn't taken a stand, the Gemara finally rules ishtadif b'nei chori tarfo mi mishabdi. When the b'nei chorin properties that are held by a borrower go bad, the lender is entitled to seek compensation from purchasers, people who purchased land after the loan had been extended, and they cannot say to the lender, what are you bothering us for? We left free properties, we left owned properties by the lender, by the borrower, when we bought the land, and you should go to that. So the lender says, what do you mean go to that? It's gone bad, therefore I'm coming to you. As you can see, a slash mark appears, and on the side we have the slash mark indicates a new trend of thought, and on the side we have a nosei, mivneh heading, introducing the topic and the structural explanation, because here you see triangles. The triangle introduces shnei piskei abaye, two rulings of abaye be'inyan regarding the following, hamakne nechosim le'isha, a man gives properties to a woman. He assigns properties to a woman. However, it's a type of deal with what we call strings attached. He says to the woman, "V'acharayech leploni," that after you die, I want the property, and he mentions a specific individual to receive it afterwards. Number one, Mahadin imhi mocheres lacherim. What is the law if she should choose to sell that property to someone else, to her friends? Number two, ma heim zuchuyos bailo. What rights does the husband have? How does he figure in this picture? The Gemara. Omar Abaye. Nechosai lech v'acharayach leploni. I want you, speaking to a woman, to have my properties, and after you, I want it to go to so and so. V'omda v'nises. And then this woman, who was a single woman when it was given to her, she then gets married. Baal loyachave. The Baal, the husband that just entered the picture, he has the status of a lokeach, of a purchaser. V'ein l'acharayach b'mokom baal klum. And with the husband's entering the picture, it knocks out the acharayach of ever receiving the properties. The Gemara asks, Kiman, this ruling of Abaye is based on which Tanaic authority? Answer, Ki Hai Tana Desanya. It reflects Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, who will be the second of the two opinions in the following source, which says, Nechosai Leich Vachrech Leploni. Man assigns, a person assigns properties to a woman and says, after you, I want it to go to so and so. Yorad Rishon Umochar, the first one enters the property and then sells it. In other words, the woman who received the property, if she, after receiving it, she goes and sells it to some friend of hers, Hasheni Motzi Miyad HaLekuchos Divrei Rebbe. That acharayach that was mentioned in the original instructions still has rights and can take it away from the purchasers, the ones that purchased from the first one, from the first receiver. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Oimer Ein L'Sheni Elamash Shishia Rishon. Reb Shimon says no. The acharayach in that story has only that which was left by the Rishon. But if that Rishon sold away all of that which she had received, the acharayach, that Sheni, the second party that was originally specified, is out of luck. So Abaye, where we saw his name in a triangle, he said that the acharayach is knocked out. That idea of the acharayach being knocked out, what is the Tanaic source for that? We just saw Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. So you can say that Abaye is a reflection, or he paskins, he rules like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. The Gemara asks, "Umi Omar Abaye Hachi?" Would Abaye align himself with Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? The Omar Abaye, here Abaye himself is quoted as saying, "Ezu Rosh Arum, who is a scheming evil man, ze hamasi etza limkor binechasim Reb Shimon ben Gamliel." That's someone who advises someone who had received properties that were earmarked that after them it would go to someone else, and you come along and advise the first receiver to sell it, make some money from it, sell it off to your friend in the meantime, and by doing so your sale will be a binding sale and that acharayach won't get anything. So you see that Abaye is a very contemptuous view of the Reb Shimon ben Gamliel approach. So the Gemara says what we just said is not accurate. Mi komar tino say. In the case that Abaye addressed, we saw that the woman on her own went and got married to the husband, bringing in that lokeach status, a person with a lokeach status. Yeah, did Abaye tell the lady, you just received the properties and it was earmarked for someone else to receive later? Does it say there? Did Abaye say that we tell the lady to go marry a man so as to cut out the acharayach from the picture? No, it doesn't say Tino say that we advise her to get married. That would be the tantamount advising her to sell. Nises, comma, this the the source above, or the Abaye's din above spoke about, on her own she got married. What Abaye was objecting to was someone who was a financial advisor giving advice to cut out the subsequent receiver from ever getting it. But that's not what Abaye described. Abaye wasn't, in the triangle case, Abaye wasn't describing the giving of advice to the first woman who was the receiver to go marry someone to cut out the second receiver from ever getting it. And so just to repeat, what Abaye and his contemptuousness toward Reb Shimon Leah was not Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's ruling whatsoever. His ruling stands. But someone who gives advice for someone to, in effect, come to that reality of cutting out the second person, that is what's not acceptable. The Omar Abaye, Abaye's second halacha, Nechosai lech v'acharayach leploni. A woman was granted property by some a giver, and he says, after you, I want the property to go to so-and-so. Umachra, the first lady to receive, sold that gift. Umesa, and then she died. Habal moitzi miyad halukuchos. The husband of that woman to have received the property takes away from the people that purchased from her. V'acharayach miyad habal, miyad baal. The person that was originally earmarked to be the second receiver takes away from the husband. Let us glance at Rashi, where we have a little star several lines up. You see, Rashi says v'acharayach at the beginning of the line. You have the dibur masil. That second party can take away from the husband. The Chiyomer Abaye, Abaye originally had said, "Ein acharayach b'mokum abal klum." That was shenosan lo kishi pnuya v'niseis. That's when the woman received the property as a single girl and then got married. Avol bi'omer l'nesua. But if you're giving property to a woman who is currently married, and you tell her, that married woman, v'acharayach leploni, after you, I want it to go to so-and-so, hochi karmala. What the giver is saying is, acharayach likni ba'lo likni. I want that subsequent person to receive it, and not your husband. So therefore, Gemara is saying, Abaye himself is saying, here in the Gemara, v'acharayach can take it away from the Baal, v'loikeach miyad acharayach, and the purchaser, who originally purchased from the woman, can take it away from the acharayach, and this is based on Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's ruling that the first one's sale is a solid sale. He, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, had said above, "Ein l'sheni elamashashir rishon umukminon l'kulhu biyada delokeach." And after this, okay, this succession of removals extracting the property or extricating the property from the respective individuals, we end up leaving it in the hands of that purchaser, the one who purchased from the first woman. The Gemara asks, "My shno mehadisnan, how is this ruling different than the Mishnah that we saw on Omid Aleph, where there we had a similar situation, and there the ruling was v'chayzrois cholila ad shiasu pshara beinehem." The collection continues revolving around and around until they come to a compromise solution. So the Gemara says there's a difference between Abaye's case and the case of the Mishnah, where a woman had removed herself from dealing with one of the purchasers without going over the whole case again. So what's the difference between the case Abaye spoke about here and the Mishnah? Hasam islhu pseido lekulhu. In that case, everyone is losing out. Haha, in Abaye number 2, lokeach hu de islay pseido. The only one that laid out money in Abaye number 2 is the person that bought the land, that paid money to the first receiver. So there's one clear loser. The rest were not losers. The rest were simply gift receivers. So being that in Abaye number 2, there's only one clear person who would be suffering a loss, that is the person that's granted the land. In the case of the Mishnah, all the parties there would be experiencing a loss, and therefore, because in addition to the purchaser featured in the Mishnah, you also have the ladies that have a ksuba coming to them. So in that case, you have to come to a compromise settlement. Also, Raphram Omar Lishmaitzo Kameid Ravashi. Raphram presented Abaye's teaching to Ravashi that said that we leave the property in the hand of the purchaser. So the question now arises, Mi Omar Abaye Hochi, do we leave the property in the hand of the purchaser? The Omar Abaye, but in Abaye number 1, In the very similar case, Nechosai Lech V'acharayach Leploni, Omdo V'niseis, Baal Loikeach Havei V'ein L'acharayach B'mokom Baal Klum. In that case, where there was a husband in the picture, the husband is the one that keeps the property. And we saw in that very case, that, as opposed to this case, as opposed to case Abaye number 2, where Abaye said that the lokeach gets it at the expense of the baal, whereas the baal doesn't keep it. In Abaye number 1, we saw that the baal is the one that keeps it. The husband is the one that keeps it. So the Gemara answers, Omar Lei. Hasam di Omar lo kishi pnuya. In Abaye 1, the speaker was giving the land to a woman that had not yet been married. Hacha di Omar lo kishi nesua. This is a point that we saw earlier in the Rashi. In Abaye number 2, the giver was speaking to a woman that was married at the point she was granted the gift. My Ka'omar law, what was the giver saying to her, to this married woman? He was saying, Acharayach likni, ba'al lo likni. I want that subsequent person to get it after you, not your husband. And a person has a right to direct his property wherever he wants when he's saying something that's clear. In the first case, Abaye number 1, the giver was not excluding the husband. There was no husband on the scene to begin with. So, in effect, there's a certain level of consistency. In Abaye number 1, after Abaye there described the Baal as a lokeach, the Baal was the one to end up with the property. In Abaye number 2, we saw that the lokeach in that story was the one to hold on. It wasn't the husband, as we just explained, but the common point between Abaye 1 and Abaye 2 is that it's the lokeach, the one who has the lokeach status, or the actual lokeach, is the one to get the property. And now we have the closing phrase of the Mishnah, which when we learned the Mishnah, we said we'll leave it till to this point in the Gemara, and we'll see the Rashi to explain. V'chein Baal Chov, the Gemara continues, Tana v'chein bal chov u'shnei lekuchos, v'chein isha balas chov u'shnei lekuchos. Even though the Brisa, generally speaking, is an elaboration and a clarification of the Mishnah, here the clarification itself needs clarification, and we'll accomplish that by looking at the Rashi. So let's together look at Rashi. We're looking at Rashi a few lines up from here. V'chein bal chov u'shnei lekuchos. Reuven noshe b'shimon mona. Reuven is trying to collect. He had lent money to Shimon. He's trying to collect a mona, $100 from Shimon. V'lo shtei sodos, and Shimon had two fields. U'machron l'shnayim, and he sold the fields to two people. Zuba chamishim v'zuba chamishim. He sold each field to, worth only 50. Each one field was worth 50. The Kosav Balchov Lokeh Sheni, Reuven, who was trying to collect the money, he was the lender. He wrote a disclaimer to the second purchaser. Dinu Dvarim Ein Li Imoch. Very similar to what we saw in the Mishnah. Balchov Notel Miad Horishon. Reuven, in collecting his debt, can go to the first purchaser. The Kan Ein Lomar, here the first purchaser cannot tell Reuven, oh, hinachti mokom shetigve himeno, I left that second purchaser, the subsequent purchaser, that was the source of your collection. So go to him. Why is it that the Lokeach Rishon cannot say that? Very simply, Sherei Chovo Keneged Shtehen. Reuven's debt to be collected is amounts to the value of the two fields. The Lokeach Rishon Motzi Miad Hasheni. Well, after the Lokeach Rishon loses to Reuven, the Lokeach Rishon then takes from the Lokeach Sheni. After all, the first guy bought with a guarantee, and since he's the earlier purchaser, any subsequent purchaser is subject to a lien that the first purchaser has on those properties. So the Lokeach Rishon takes from the Sheni. Ubalchov Choser Motziaf Zu Min Horishon. And the original creditor can take this field too from the Rishon. Velokeach Sheni Mibalchov. The second purchaser takes from the creditor because that Balchov had removed himself from challenging the Lokeach Sheni. Vechoserin Cholilo Ad Shiasu Pshara. And this will go around and around until they strike a compromise, just like we saw in the Mishnah. The Mishnah featured a case of a woman and her attempts to collect her ksuba, and similarly with regard to someone who loaned money, removed himself from any challenges to the second purchaser, as stated. Rashi continues, V'chein isha ba laschov, shoya lo choiv, ksubosa abayla. A woman had a ksuba claim against her husband, umochar shtei sodosav lishnayim, and the husband had sold two fields to two purchasers. The ein bishnayim el kedei ksubasa, and between the two fields, you have the amount of the ksuba. In other words, each field was worth only partial ksuba. The kosva lisheni dinu dvarim ein liimoch, and the woman wrote to the second purchaser, I have no challenge against you. Ha'isha motzia miad lokeach rishon, the woman has a right to collect the field from the first purchaser, umin hasheni, and the first purchaser collects from the second purchaser, the first purchaser having bought the field with a guarantee, and anything, if he loses out, he has a right to seize upon any properties that were subsequently sold. And there's a note on the side to read with the girsa, Voisha Chizeres Umotzia Avzu Minorishon, and the woman, after the first person recovered from the second purchaser, the woman takes away from the first purchaser, Vasheni Minoisha. And as the Rashi concludes, V'chozrin Cholila, and the case keeps going until they strike some type of compromise. As you can see, that brings us to the end of the 10th Perek of Ksubos. We now, with Siyata Dishmaya, begin the 11th Perek, the Perek Almona Nizoinis. The Mishnah opens up with the word Nizonis, which you can see in our Mark Gemaras, which, by the way, if you want to access Mark Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. The Mishnah says, Amona Nizonis Minichse Yisaimim, a widow derives her daily support, her food support, from properties held by the orphans or the heirs of her husband. Maisiyadeh Shelohen, any income she produces goes to them. V'ein chayovin b'kvurasa, as far as bearing the bill for her burial, that is not their job. Yorshel yorshek subasa chayovin b'kvurasa, those that inherit her ksuba, they are the ones that have to tend to her burial. The Gemara opens up with, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads, Birur Loshon HaMishnah. We want to clarify the expression in the Mishnah, Nizonis or Hanizonis. Notice the hey making all of the difference. Do you read it like the text appears in our Mishnah, in the printed Gemara, so you have it without a hey? Or maybe the more accurate version is with the hey. And you'll ask, what difference does that make? You'll see in the Gemara. Ibayalaho nizonis tanan o hanizonis tanan. When you say the word nizonis, you're stating a fact that, and the Gemara spells this out, nizonis tanan ukaanshe golio. Do we leave it the word as is without adding a hey to it? And that's the way of the people of Golio, the northern part of Israel. The losagi de lo yavi law. It's not within the power of the Yisoyimim to deprive her, to call the shots, which would result in her not receiving mizonos. As long as she wants to be in the position of receiving mizonos, they're obligated to provide her with that. Oy, Dilma. Or maybe, Hanizonis Tanan. The understanding of the Mishnah is the woman, a widow, who happens to be receiving mizonos, indicating that it's not something that the widow decides. Rather, uka'anshe Yehuda, as the Gemara goes on to say, the approach is that which would be taken by the people of Yehuda, the southern region of Israel, the Ibo lo yavila, and if they should so desire, they can decide, We don't want you to receive mizonos anymore, but of course, it's not as cruel and callous as that sounds, but rather they say, we want you to take the ksuba payment, which is that original amount that was written into the ksuba document and guaranteed by the husband. Take that amount and leave our premises, meaning and no longer receive any food support from us. So how are we to approach the Mishnah? So the Gemara continues at the top of Daf Tzadi Vav. Ta Shema. Notice we have a long marking here. Omar Rebbe Zera Omar Shmuel. Mitzias Almona Liatzma. A found article on the part of a widow. A found article that is that type of thing that one's entitled to keep. A woman finds some strewn unidentifiable cash in a public thoroughfare. That's something that one is clearly entitled to pick up and not even concern himself with returning it to the one who lost it. That's a mitzia. And Shmuel says the mitzia of an almona is something she's entitled to keep. And Shmuel is an Amora. So he issues rulings based on the Stam Mishnah. We have a Stam Mishnah here, by the way. It's a Stam Mishnah. It's an unnamed Mishnah. So the unnamed Mishnah is going to be of halachic significance. And we know there's a machlokas between the Anshe Golil and the Anshe Yehuda. That's already a long ago established machlokas. But our issue is, how are we to learn the Stam Mishnah, which represents halacha lemaisa? How should we conduct ourselves? Who has the upper hand with regard to the Almona versus the Yesaimim? Can they call the shots on her, or does she call the shots on them? So Shmuel tells us that an article found by Almona she keeps for herself. Iyamis Bishlamo Hani Zoynes Tanan Shapir. If you say that the reading of the Mishnah is like the Anshe Yehuda with the hay, then the ruling of Shmuel will make sense. Now just think about that for a second. There's an Almona who is getting support from the Yesoimim. Does it stand to reason that she keeps the found items for herself? Doesn't seem, on a superficial first glance level, that doesn't seem reasonable. It would, what? Why? Because if they're supporting her, she should have to give to them in exchange things she finds. And yet Shmuel says the Metzias of Almona she keeps for herself, you know what must be? It must be that you're dealing with an Almona that was cut out of receiving mizonos. They cut her out. They stopped her from receiving mizonos, which is, according to the Anshe Yehuda, something they can do. So Shapir, then we can set up Shmuel, is she's not receiving mizonos anymore. Elo I amris nizonos. If you can say the Mishnah is read as nizonos, that it's obligatory upon the Yesoimim to constantly provide her with mizonos until she decides otherwise. But so if you say nizoynes tanan nehavu kabal, the yorshim should be like a husband, just like a husband is obligated to support his wife, they should be like occupying his position. Ma baal metzias isha lebailo, just like in the case of a husband, things she finds go to the husband. Ochanami metzias isha liyorshim, things she finds should go to the heirs. And yet Shmuel says she keeps it for herself. How is it that she's keeping it for herself? If they're obligated to support her, namely that the reading of the Mishnah is nizones, why should she be able to keep it? They should receive the Metziah in exchange for their having to support her. At this point, the Gemara rejects that conclusion. We can keep the Mishnah in the nizones fashion that they're obligated. And you'll ask, so then why does she keep her Metzios? Here we look into the depth of the enactment. The Rabbonin did enact that things that a woman finds go to her husband, but why did they make that enactment? Deloteve lo eva, so that there should be no feeling of eva, of hate between them. What would that possibly be? Well, if you're a husband and you're supporting your wife, you're constantly giving to her, to be a relationship in a one-way direction will create contention, ill feelings. In order to avoid the ill feelings and contention, we say make it two-way street, that in exchange for his providing her with mizonos, she will provide him with those things she finds, with her metzios. So in a husband-wife relationship, it's of utmost importance to us, to the Rabbonon, to prevent eva. Hani, when you're dealing with heirs, tehevelu eva. Here, if you translate it literally, you can get the wrong impression. Literally, it means let there be ill feelings. I'm not sure that you want to translate it as such, but rather it doesn't bother us. It's not of importance for us to make enactments to prevent eva from developing. In the case of a married woman, it's important for us that even if the Mishnah that is can be read nizones, and in the case of a woman, why is it that the almona keeps the mitzios? The reason for that is because we're not we haven't made an enactment to prevent Eva. When do we make enactments to prevent Eva? Husband-wife relationship. But almona, widow, heir relationship, even though they may be obligated in supporting her, that doesn't give them automatic rights to her metzios. That would be only in an environment where we make enactments to prevent Eva. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.